It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Thursday the 3rd. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Just when you thought that your Xbox, PlayStation, internet-connected Blu-ray, Apple TV, Chromecast, Roku setup couldn't get more crowded, Amazon has now announced its own video streaming device. Along with Amazon Instant Video and Amazon Games, Fire TV, as it's being called, will help you watch Netflix, view your photos, host it in the Amazon Cloud, of course, etc. But it's a crowded market, so now that we know the what, how about the why? For that, let's ask our friend Molly Wood, technology columnist at the New York Times. Molly, how are you?
I'm great, Ben. How are you?
I'm good. So what are we doing? Are you going to get a Fire TV?
I'm very excited to take a look at it. I think that for the mainstream, the Amazon Fire TV is a direct competitor to Apple TV.
This is really about ecosystems, right? Let's assume that within 5 years, every single television bought will be internet connected, which renders pretty obsolete all of these separate pieces of streaming hardware. So is this basically about Amazon just wanting your first stop when you turn on your television to be Amazon?
I think you're right. You're absolutely right that it is about trying to extend the Amazon brand and make you associate it with all of your shopping and all of your entertainment. And I have to believe that if Amazon is going this hard into an ecosystem play, that a phone's got to be next.
Ah, interesting prediction. Molly Wood, technology columnist for the New York Times. Molly, thank you.
My pleasure.
Question. When was the last time you took all that change from your change jar and hauled it to a kiosk that said Coinstar on it? The company that trades you cash for your oodles of coin is expanding, and that means the next time you dump the jar, you might want to bring along the gift cards that you don't want or still have a balance on. Coinstar will now take those too, as Mitchell Hartman reports.
David Robertson of financial newsletter The Nielsen Report starts us off with a story.
Like you get a gift in the old days from Aunt Myrtle of socks you didn't want. Now you're getting a prepaid card from Aunt Myrtle to a store that you didn't want to purchase from.
So Aunt Myrtle's nephew, Spike, now has a $100 gift card for JCPenney. Not going to shop there, so he sells it to Coinstar for $70. He can get a tattoo with that. Coinstar unloads it to another consumer for $90. $20 profit split between Coinstar and the company that markets the cards online.
Yeah, we like the economics of the business.
Coinstar VP Jeff Dirks says a lot of gift cards are never used. At least this gives cardholders a chance to get most of their money back. Psychologist Kit Yarrow says this could help consumers burdened by gift cards.
If you're trying to get rid of one, everything in the store is an option, and they almost feel pressure to buy.
Then they spend even more than the gift card is worth. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
If you're like me, you've got more usernames and passwords than you do useful user accounts. They're hard to keep track of, and they are entry points for those who would steal your data. So maybe you get a password manager, and then if you're feeling extra saucy, maybe you get a home server to store all your information on your own cloud. But as this game of privacy cat and mouse continues, it starts to cost. Author and ProPublica reporter Julia Angwin is wondering if online privacy is becoming a luxury good. Julia, thanks for joining us.
It's so great to be here.
So first, can we define luxury good?
Well, I'm defining it as I paid way too much to protect my privacy last year.
How much? How much?
Almost $2,500.
Now, I get the impression that basically, if you're a poor person, it's difficult for you to opt out.
Yeah, look, people who are like me, tech elites, basically, are going to get these sophisticated tools to sort of really carefully manage our data. But the group of people who aren't empowered, don't have time or money to have these tools, are going to be what I call basically a giant sucker list.
I have to guess that I'm on a large number of sucker lists. this is interesting because a lot of Americans don't really care. Why should they care, and what specifically could a regular person do to discourage surveillance and data leveraging?
The average person should care because they probably have something that they would rather not have known about them. For instance, I would rather have it not known that, like, at 10 o'clock at night...
Wait. This is going to go on the radio. Okay,
yes,
no, sorry. Go ahead.
Like, that's often when I kind of do some bleary shopping for my kids' clothing. And I do not pay as much attention to price comparison at that time.
Okay.
That will be known.
Right. Then they'll start marketing towards you that fancy yogurt that you don't actually need.
Right. When you go online to a website, it dynamically creates itself that moment. There is no technological reason that it couldn't only show you the expensive yogurt, right?
Right.
In fact, that is very likely to start happening.
Julia Angwin is a senior reporter at ProPublica and the author of the book Dragnet Nation, A Quest for Privacy, Security, and Freedom in a World of Relentless Surveillance. Julia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And before we go today, a follow-up on an important Colorado story we covered that does not have to do with legalized weed. Yes, demand was high. Yes, it made me think of a more bizarre version of the critically acclaimed film Cowboys vs. Aliens. But no, the residents of Deer Trail, Colorado, voted against getting permits to hunt drones this week. Back to shooting at rusty cans, I guess. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.